Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, February 12th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho's Division of Financial Management outlines big impacts of proposed budget cuts in a letter to the Idaho Legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. Washington Senate Committee passes $3.5 billion millionaires tax. And Pullman City Council plans to increase utility rates and cut expenditures to rein in $3 million deficit. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Division of Financial Management Director Lori Wolf sent a letter to the Idaho Legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee this week listing the impacts of the budget cuts the committee approved on Friday last week. The powerful legislative committee decided to reduce state agency budgets this fiscal year by 2%, in addition to the 3% holdback Governor Brad Little ordered last year. The committee expects most state agencies to reduce their budgets by 5% for fiscal year 2027. The letter said the governor appreciates the exclusion of K-12 public schools, Medicaid, the Department of Correction, and the Idaho State Police from the planned budget cuts, but the cuts to other agencies would hurt the state. Wolf wrote, additional cuts jeopardize Idaho's ability to keep up with population growth, service delivery, infrastructure, and economic development. These effects are not temporary. Rebuilding after cuts can take years, even when revenues recover. In his State of the State address, Governor Little proposed no cuts to Idaho's courts, but the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee has voted to reduce the judiciary's budget by 5%, or $3.8 million. Wolf said the committee's decision to reduce the Idaho State Tax Commission's budget by $900,000 for next fiscal year, on top of the cuts for this fiscal year, would mean residents' tax returns would be slowed down by as much as 24 weeks, and refunds would be delayed by up to 6 weeks. The proposed $265,000 cut to the Idaho Department of Lands would either mean fewer seasonal firefighters or a reduction in the duration of the season they work, which would increase the risk of uncontrolled fires. Wolf wrote the planned $777,000 cut to the Health Department's Children's Mental Health and Adult Mental Health Services would lead to kids and adults with mental health challenges without timely care. That could cost the state, as those pushed out of preventative care would have to use hospitals or other crisis services. The letter says the proposed $1.8 million in cuts to the Idaho Career Technical Education Program would disproportionately impact rural Idaho. The cut would eliminate 164 programs and reduce high school students' abilities to get a nurse's aide certification, take welding classes, or receive other forms of technical training to make them career ready after graduation. Wolf wrote, when we start eliminating these programs, we limit opportunities for these kids to be able to continue this. That is what long-term structural damage looks like. She said community colleges may lose 7% of their budgets under the proposal because of the continuing education reductions. The Pullman City Council voted Tuesday to raise utility rates on local residents amid a $3 million budget shortfall. Pullman Finance and Administrative Services Director Jeff Albrecht told council members increasing expenses and poor revenues have created the multi-million dollar gap in the general fund. Albrecht said the city used cash reserves to address previous shortfalls, such as the 2024 deficiency. He said the council's previous use of reserves is no longer sustainable.
The general fund, the primary source of revenues is taxes. So it would be if there's opportunities for tax revenues. Or then the second biggest after tax against taxes is over 73%. The next one is fees for services. So those would be the things. Certainly there is some pass-through from the state on things, so lobbying the state to continue to get those pass-throughs. I know there's a lot of things that are being discussed at the state level about the fuel tax, for example. How do you tax electric vehicles? And that's something, and Washington's not alone. There's a lot of states struggling with that, right? So if you have an electric car and you have a gas vehicle, right now there's some registration costs that are higher for the electric vehicle, but really the gas driver is really subsidizing the road repairs for the electric vehicle. There's obviously lots of advantages to doing an electric vehicle, but you're not contributing to the road repair at the same rate. So some of those types of things, and those are state and in some cases even national issues, to make sure that you talk about and do that. So that is an option. Obviously then, not as much in the general fund, but a lot of it is grants. And it's important that we maintain our grants. Like I said, transit has done a wonderful job. It's put transit in a very good position. But if those grants go away, that all of a sudden goes from probably our best funded fund on in the city to our worst funded overnight. If those so making sure that legislators understand the importance of these grants and what they go to and the impacts they have is a good option also.
That was Pullman Finance and Administrative Services Director Jeff Albrecht speaking at Tuesday night's Pullman City Council meeting. Albrecht said, "We are in a very real situation where, particularly in the general fund, we are looking at cutting services. This helps reduce the amount of those will need to be cut. City council members approved a 6% utility rate increase on city water, sewer, stormwater, and biosolids hauling fees on Tuesday, which they say should bring in about $712,000 annually. The council also passed a 3% business and operations tax on utilities following a revote when the first attempt failed over confusion over which items would get a tax increase. The council revisited the issue when they realized the city would be essentially taxing itself if they transferred $450,000 from utility funds into the general fund. General fund revenues support the most visible government services, including police and fire departments, the library, parks and recreation, community development, and other core functions. Albrecht said, "While increasing the cost of living and doing business in Pullman is never something you want to do, I'll speak as a resident here. If I want to live in Pullman, I want to feel like I have good police services, fire services, parks and rec services, and a great library." He told the council right now the reductions will not eliminate or force reductions in the level of service. He noted expenses are almost certainly to exceed revenues, and additional rate increases or cuts may still be needed for a balanced budget. The meeting ended following a passage of about $1 million in reductions to this year's general fund expenditures. The Pullman City Council is holding a Council Goals public open house on Tuesday of next week, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Neal Public Library. They want to collect ideas from the community on what the city's goals and priorities should be for 2026 and 2027. The city council said in an announcement, "This will be an informal open house, so please feel free to drop in whenever you can. Each city council member will have a table, and you'll be able to move between them freely to ask questions and share thoughts." There's also a form on the Pullman City website for people to use to share their thoughts. The forum will be open through Saturday, February 28th, to collect ideas so the City Council can consider them as part of their goals-setting process. The Washington Senate Ways and Means Committee made some adjustments before passing a bill implementing income taxes on millionaires this week. Majority legislative Democrats pushed through the changes directed at placating Democratic Governor Ferguson and other critics. According to the Seattle Times, Senate Bill 6346, as passed by the committee, includes the previously proposed 9% tax on annual earnings over $1 million per year beginning in 2028. Lawmakers say the proposal would bring in about $3.5 billion annually and would affect about 30,000 Washington taxpayers. According to Senate legislative staff estimates, the amended bill would exempt firms with gross revenues under $300,000 per year from the business and occupation tax and would provide relief for businesses grossing up to $600,000 per year. Senate Majority Leader Jamie Peterson of Seattle, the bill's chief sponsor, said it would exempt more than 70% of state businesses from Washington's business and occupation tax. Senate Bill 6346 also would double the maximum charitable deductions to $100,000 per year and includes a deduction for commercial fishing businesses who set aside money for repairs or replacing aging boats. Democrat Yasmin Trudeau of Tacoma said the proposed income tax on wealthy people is to make things more fair through targeting the rich whose wealth has grown exponentially greater than those at the bottom. Trudeau said the measure is trying to level that playing field. Democrat Drew Hansen of Bainbridge Island was one of the Democrats who opposed the bill, saying he will assume a neutral position for now. He voted no recommendation in committee. Hansen said he is open to the idea but agrees with Governor Ferguson the income tax bill should include more tax breaks to, quote, make life in this state affordable for working families. Senate Minority Leader John Braun of Centralia said voters have repeatedly rejected proposed income taxes in the past. Braun, a Republican, said it ignores the will of the people, it ignores the economic impact it's going to have on our state, and absolutely picks winners and losers. Republican Senator Chris Gildon of Puyallup said residents are smart enough to, quote, not be fooled by this ruse. Gildon claimed people know an income tax on anyone would eventually mean an income tax on everyone in the state. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Hungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill in Boise has ruled against State Attorney General Raul Labrador's motion to dismiss a lawsuit challenging Idaho's near-total abortion ban. Dr. Stacy Sabe, who is a maternal-fetal medicine specialist, wants the state to allow medically necessary abortions. He sued the Idaho Board of Medicine and Ada County Prosecuting Attorney Jan Bennett. In moving to dismiss the lawsuit, Attorney General Raul Labrador wrote, "The Idaho Supreme Court told doctors in 2023 they have broad clinical judgment to provide necessary care. Dr. Sabe did not educate himself on what Idaho law permits, which is required of every doctor in Idaho. His patients suffered from his lack of understanding, not because of our laws." Judge Windmill wrote, "While courts generally leave moral questions such as abortion up to the states, the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, quote, exists to circumscribe what the state may force individuals to endure and how far it may go when prioritizing some lives over others. Idaho could not make a mother undergo a bone marrow transplant to save her child. Can it require a pregnant woman to give up her ovaries or her kidneys in the hopes of saving a fetus? Answering that question will require the court to weigh the evidence of our nation's history, traditions, and practices. For that reason, this case must go to trial. Attorney General's Office spokesperson Damon Sidour said the decision has clear legal errors. Sidour said in a statement, "We look forward to trial where we will present expert medical and historical evidence that Idaho's Defense of Life Act fully complies with all constitutional requirements, protects unborn life, and ensures doctors can make good faith medical decisions to keep women safe."
February is American Heart Month, and a heart transplant recipient wants to spread awareness of a critically misunderstood condition. Lisa Salberg founded the Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy Association, a nonprofit that supports and educates the community about the disorder. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM, causes the walls of the heart to thicken, leading to heart stiffness and less room for blood to fill it. The heart has to work harder to pump blood, causing symptoms such as fatigue, a fast heartbeat, or chest pain. Salberg says only 15 to 20% of people with HCM in the U.S. know they have it.
They might think they have athletically induced asthma. They might have been told they just have an innocent heart murmur. They might just think they're short of breath because they're getting older, or that palpitation was a little too much caffeine.
Salberg estimates HCM affects anywhere from 1 in 200 to 1 in 500 people and is genetic. She encourages people to look back at their family tree to find cardiac diagnoses or symptoms that might have been HCM. That can help you and your family members know if you should be tested. Nearly 9% of people in Montana have been diagnosed with some kind of heart condition. Salberg says a generation ago, a patient might not have gotten an HCM diagnosis. She adds researchers have made a lot of progress since then, and there are now medications that can help with treatment. She adds scientists have discovered 40% of the genes believed to cause HCM and urges you to get genetic testing if you have a thick heart muscle disorder.
That is when you should go ahead and get a genetic test to see if you can find an identified marker or not. If you can, that information can be used to identify other people in your family.
Salberg started her nonprofit 30 years ago when her sister died unexpectedly from HCM. Salberg herself was diagnosed with it when she was 12, and now she's celebrating the 9th anniversary of her heart transplant. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
Most levees in southeastern Washington, including Whitman County, were passing in Tuesday's special elections. In Washington, ballots postmarked by Election Day are counted, meaning there will be more ballots to count as they arrive at election offices. The results as of Tuesday night are as follows. La Crosse School District's three-year replacement capital levy to modernize, renovate, and improve school facilities is passing with 147 votes for and 69 votes against, or 68% in favor. This would provide the district with $384,000 in 2027, $393,000 in 2028, and $403,000 in 2029 to fund repairs to the high school and elementary school buildings. Homeowners would pay $150 per $100,000 assessed value. St. John's School District's two-year replacement educational programs and operations levy is passing with 189 votes to 96 votes against, or 66% in favor. This would provide $510,000 in 2027 and $525,000 in 2028 to support athletics, extracurricular activities, smaller class sizes, and professional learning. Homeowners would pay $165 per $100,000 assessed property value. St. John's School District's other two-year replacement capital levy also appears to be passing with 196 votes in favor and 89 votes against, or 69% in favor. This would provide $350,000 in 2027 and 2028 to continue funding for classroom technology, network systems, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, roofing, and building maintenance. Property owners would pay $115 in 2027 and $110 in 2028 per $100,000 assessed value. Rosalia School District's two-year replacement educational programs and operations levy is passing with 162 votes in favor and 99 votes against, or 62% in favor. This would provide $555,000 in 2027 and $572,000 in 2028 to continue funding for teachers, support staff, athletics, extracurricular activities, maintenance, operations, and transportation. Property owners would pay $250 per $100,000 assessed value. Rosalia School District's other two-year replacement capital levy is passing with 162 votes in favor and 98 votes against, or 63% in favor. This would provide $90,000 in 2027 and 2028 to fund new equipment, infrastructure, security cameras, access controls, and door locks. Property owners would pay $41 in 2027 and $39 in 2028 per $100,000 assessed value. In Soton County, Clarkston School District's four-year replacement of the expiring educational programs and operations levy is passing so far with 2,154 votes in favor and 1,537 votes against, or 58% in favor. The levy would provide over $5.4 million in 2027, nearly $5.6 million in 2028, about $5.8 million in 2029, and over $5.9 million in 2030 to support the district's security, nurses, curriculum, athletics, technology, extracurricular activities, and teacher pay and training. Property owners would pay $250 per $100,000 assessed property value. Whitman County Auditor Sandy Jameson said the results will be finalized Friday, February 20th. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area, it'll be mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear tonight, low 31. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, high 45. And Friday night, 60% chance of rain, mainly after 10 p.m., snow level 4,300 feet, cloudy low 36. 80% chance of rain on Saturday, snow level 3,800 feet, high 44. On Saturday night, 80% chance of precipitation, rain before 4 a.m., then rain likely possibly mixed with snow. Snow level 3,800 feet, low 36, little or no snow accumulation expected. And on Sunday, 60% chance of precipitation, rain likely, possibly mixed with snow before noon.